What's going on, football fans? It's me, J.R. Clark, back again with another Pound for Pound ATL live, joined as always by my co-host Jonathan Holder. And today we are joined by a special guest. I don't know how many times can you be on a show and still be considered a special guest?
You need tiers of guests like where tiers. You can be a guest, friend of
we can do friend of the show, Joe Patrick. I think you've definitely moved up and definitely leveled up. Friend of the show, Joe Patrick. Gentlemen, how are you doing? Joe, I'll start with you. How are you, sir?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, it's nice to have the Falcons kind of, you know, back, and it feels like real life again after the whole coaching search, which kind of it unfolds almost exclusively online, at least to us. It's nice to kind of be back in the building with some of the people. I was obviously fortunate enough to be there. And quite a press conference that I'm sure we're going to get into today.
Oh, for sure. Jonathan, how are you doing today, sir?
Man, I'm doing wonderful. It's been a good week so far. The press conference was really, it was cool to see that, just with all the staff hirings and everything that's been going on over the last week. It's been a good time.
Yeah, no, it's been fun. It's been interesting. We've been in the news, so to speak, for all the right reasons. Nothing crazy. It's been a lot of fun. Pro tip for all you folks out there that are 40 plus, be careful when you're bending over to pick up anything. Sunday, I blew my freaking back out picking up a dodgeball, a 1 pound dodgeball. So just, if y'all stretch, you know what I'm saying? That's all I'm trying to say. Like, limber up.
Yep. You're getting to that age, man.
Hello. I mean, come on now. It's like, I've always heard people talk about the 40s and everything starts to fall apart, and I was like, oh, y'all are full of crap. Maybe if you took better. No, they're not full of crap at all.
Literally one of the most painful things you can do, like once you start, into your 40s and getting close to your 50s, the most dangerous thing you do is actually sleep in your bed, because you wake up the next morning and you are sore everywhere. It's like got beat up by your own for this.
Anyway, so I'm gonna put my old man back in the, put him back in the house and tell everybody to get off my lawn. But no, it was a good day yesterday as far as the Raheem's presser. We finally got to see that, much to the chagrin of the Orlando Ledbetter, who was out in Las Vegas. He was big mad online as far as like, out there in the Twitterverse. Yeah.
I think that might have been. So he gave excuses like, it's disrespectful to the fans and this and the other. My guess is he knew he was not going to be in the building. He was going to be in Vegas and was like, that ain't fair. I have to be the first guy to ask a question. That's just how it goes.
That's right. That's definitely what it came across as.
And I love Terry Fontenot even kind of jumping in, being like, hey, are we going to like get D-Led on Zoom here for the first question or something? Like,
That was good. Willie Doc, we appreciate you greatly. He says,
thank you, Willie.
He says, found a way to go through adversity, find a way to rebuild and do it again. All it did was make me better to come back home, to find a way to finish off 2016 that we didn't get done. That was one of the great, statements. The idea of, Raheem coming back home, that's something that came across very genuine in that presser, was his excitement to be here in Atlanta, to come back to this organization. Joe, was that even more palpable in the room?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually the thing I was kind of just left ruminating on the most, I think, after the press conference, was not just the pure charisma that Raheem Morris has, but also like to just kind of put another layer on that was this kind of narrative that he has specifically with this team in this city to kind of finally, pull the sword out of that stone, which is to, in his words, to see Arthur Blank holding the Lombardi Trophy. And I thought that says a lot. Not it wasn't I want to hold up the Lombardi Trophy. It was I want to see Arthur Blank hold up the Lombardi Trophy. I want the fans of this team to see that. So it's really not about himself. And that's also so much of what he talked about during his press conference, was it's not about me. It's about the people that I work with. And so all these things kind of bring together this this kind of community that I think a lot of fans love being a part of. Like, that's why a lot of us love being sports fans, is because you become so attached to people you otherwise wouldn't really have any kind of affiliation with, but the sport brings you together and you have this kind of shared passion. And I think Raheem Morris just really embodies all that.
Yeah, very much so. Like, you definitely got that kind of vibe. The not just happy to be here, but the genuine, like, almost affection in a sense is a word that comes to mind. But like the genuine love that he had for Blank and his family. Like, I have to admit, in all these years, now, other than you said it the other day, the last time you were on the show about Blank's sons. But in this press conference was the first time I'd ever publicly heard anybody talk about Blank's sons. And it was came from, you know, Raheem. So that was an interesting, you know, tidbit there. Jonathan, what'd you think about, or like what came to mind with all the like coming home type talk?
Well, I mean, you know, a few days, or I guess the day that he was hired, you know, we saw, I can't remember who it was, Ryan Clark, I think it was who it was. And I think we already talked about this in the podcast previously, but basically he, you know, it came out, like, he came out saying, like, you know, hoping for, you know, the Jim Harbaugh thing had just come up. He had just been hired, and he was just talking, like, the day before Jim Harbaugh got hired, he was like talking to Ryan Clark saying, like, y'all hype up Harbaugh to wherever, you know, everybody else, so I can get back to Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I can go to Atlanta. Like, he wanted to, you know, come here. So when I heard that, and I didn't hear it until after he was hired. And when he was hired, I was kind of surprised. But then, you know, as we've gone along and more, I've grown more and more comfortable with it. And then, yeah, his press conference, and I saw this pop up quite a bit on Twitter, is, you know, one of the things he said was, you know, I don't have to be the smartest man in the room.
Right.
I don't need to be the smartest man in the room. And a lot of people took that as like, oh man, that's so refreshing. You know, shaded Arthur Smith and this, that, and the other. I mean, that's the narrative on Arthur Smith, that Arthur Smith felt like he was the most important, or most, the smartest guy in the room and didn't need anything from anybody. But everything we hear from Terry Fontenot is like, he was very collaborative. He was very this and that and the other. So I don't know how true that is, but that's the narrative.
Right.
But he did come across as like a guy who's like, I don't care how it gets done. I just want to get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and then you contrast that with same day, like exactly the same time, you contrast that with Quinn in Washington. And, you know, it's almost like it comes across, like Quinn comes across, especially when he's like, I'm going to give myself one swear word. I like to do hard stuff with good people.
Right.
You know, so if I just say that, it just, you know, it is what it is. But when you hear, when I heard it, it came off so like scripted. Now, I'm not saying that he's like making sure he's writing down this and that and the other, but I guarantee you he had to have been thinking about, I'm going to put this in there at some point. Because that's what it felt like. It felt rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
When you sat and listened to Raheem, and like the question comes up about Zach Robinson, you know, like, why did you pick Zach Robinson? And then he goes in detail, like, oh, well, you know, I sat and watched this guy.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, young Shanahan,
all this. I was able to see all this stuff, and what I saw in them, I see in him.
Right.
You know, and so like it. But it felt real. It felt like a guy having a conversation with you. How real or not it was, don't know. But at the end of the day, that's what it felt like. And it was refreshing in that respect, that there was no slogans. There was no, you know, Baxter physical and, you know.
Well, it's explosive and physical now, ain't it? Ain't that what
it is? That is explosive.
He's evolved. He's explosive. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. At least he's not calling the plays in Washington. So he is learning something at least.
There you go. At least to start with, until he panics. But we'll get into that here in a minute. All right, Willie Dock again with another $5. We appreciate you, sir. He says, well, Jonathan's got his finger in his eye, so he can't really hit the button. But
there he is. Thank you, Willie.
He says, I will always, he said, I was always high on Coach Raheem. And after he said that quote, talking about what he posted earlier, he said, I was super sold. I pray it translates to the field. Let's go. Yeah. That's something we're going to get into here in a second. Fred Butts with a $5 tip. We appreciate you, Fred. He said, loving the Morris hire seems hell-bent on getting us a championship. You better be. Like, that's what they all should be. Like, you should never be bent on, like, just making it. You know, that's the point of being that alpha guy. And now, our friend Kerry says, hi, Falcons fam. I made it to another live, JR. Hey, we appreciate you being here, Kerry. said, hope didn't miss much. Love the press conference yesterday. Raheem and Terry has me smiling the whole time. They were definitely doing some cheesing at each other for sure. But that kind of leads me into kind of another point. You got this little tidbit from Terry. He didn't stay long on it. Sometimes that's either A, I wasn't necessarily supposed to say that, so to speak, or what have you. But I always try to catch the little tidbits, right? And one of them saying that afterwards that he was the one leading the search, which was interesting because the way it was presented to us, you know, through the media is that it was, you know, blank leading the search. And at a certain point it was discombobulated. And so I don't know if this is like a hindsight statement of trying to put people at ease, but Joe, what'd you make of that little tidbit when he said that?
Well, I think when we talk about this subject, none of us actually know, like, and they can say things and we don't even know like what exactly is the truth. If I'm to just kind of speculate as to what I think kind of happened, honestly, which was when they said the initial thing that I think it was that Arthur Blank or whoever was going to lead the search and that Terry Fontenot would have input in the decision, that came before that press conference, the Arthur Smith firing press conference. And I think that they kind of reevaluated things after that press conference, because I think they saw the reaction of not just the media in the room, but then also just fans. I know my radio station 929, Rich McKay was on with them with an interview after that. They were also asking about it. And in that interview, Rich McKay kind of was like, man, we didn't even think this would be a topic of conversation, you know? And I think that kind of caught them by surprise, and it probably made them kind of reassess how they did things. And I think that that's pretty much clearly true based on the fact that, you know, Rich McKay's role in the organization has changed at the end of all of it. And I will say Rich McKay was in the room for the press conference. Mm-hmm. He was sitting almost directly to my right. I was Michael Rothstein next to me, and then Rich McKay was right next to him. And we all kind of like turned to Rich McKay as soon as the press conference was ending, and he was out. He was already
he was
the first one up and out. And I think it's not him being rude. I think that that's actually an intentional move by him to not want to be part of the story, because I think that's something that was kind of a cloud over the whole thing after that press conference, the firing press conference, was Rich McKay became a talking point in of himself. And
he became
overshadows a lot of the kind of more optimistic things that they wanted to unfold in the future.
It was odd. I mean, we saw it here on the show quite a bit. Like, Rich McKay became the boogeyman. He became the villain of the organization. It's like, oh, well, we have to blame somebody. We don't want to blame Terry because we like Terry. So we need we can't necessarily blame Arthur because he's the one that owns the team and he's not going anywhere. Okay. So the problem has to be with Rich McKay.
Right.
And that's the feeling that we kind of felt. So that was what we were seeing quite a bit in our chat. The idea that you know, they made sure that Beatles was up there, which I thought was kind of interesting. Obviously, Blank had a medical condition. Mm-hmm. Did they ever like clarify what that was?
No, they didn't clarify what it was, but they said that he was okay. Basically, he wanted to. So what I heard was that he wanted to be there, but it was like doctor's orders, just like, no, just take it easy. And from what I've heard is that Arthur Blank still is like adamant about speaking about what has unfolded and is going to do that with media at some point. They said this week. We'll see if that actually happens this week. Maybe it's next week. That's apparently just going to be on the phone, but he does want to talk. Like, I think it killed him to have to miss that day, because I'm sure that's something that he would love to kind of hold up there.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. So after the press conference, I listened to I was, you know, it was during work hours, so I wasn't able to like fully get in on it, but I did hear some things on the Dukes and Bell show afterwards, where they spoke to Terry first, then they spoke to Raheem Morris. And when they one of the things that they actually said was, you know, Blank was not there for a medical concern. Okay. You know, if it's legit, okay, it's legit. There's nothing wrong with that. But in their mind, they were thinking like that was almost like a blessing in disguise, because again, if Arthur Blank is there and sitting at the podium, because he's going to be there sitting at the podium, if he's there sitting at the podium, just like with when you talked about with Rich McKay, if he's there at the podium, at some point there's going to be stuff brought up about that initial conference. Yeah. and that would be taking away from Raheem Morris's day. Mm-hmm. So him not being there, and if it's BS,
so
if it's
BS.
Just a made up excuse, so what? Yeah. Like, let Raheem have his time in the spotlight today. Let this be about him, what he's going to do going forward, his vision of what this franchise is. Let that be today. Sometime later this week, you get on with the media and let them take their shots at you.
Right.
Okay. Same thing with McKay. Like you said, as soon as that thing was over, you looked over, McKay's gone, because he's like, I don't want to take anything away from this. This is his day. We can handle that business at a later date.
Right.
And then when you listen to Fontenot afterwards with Dukes and Bell, Dukes asked him straight up. I think they talked about it beforehand. Like, they were going to ask him this, like, about, you know, now you guys are, it's going to be you and Raheem talking directly to Blank. McKay mm-hmm. is kind of out of the picture, you know, and what have you. And he's like, yeah, you know, McKay's now, he's going to be doing other things in the business. Okay. But he's like, I want to clear something up about how, and it wasn't just like how it is now, but how it was before.
Right.
When Arthur Smith mm-hmm. was here. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, Rich was there as a resource for them. Mm-hmm. Yes. Did they report directly to him? Yes. Because they report directly to him. He would just go to Blank and say, here's what's going on and what have you. Like you talked about before,
it's the owner's rep. That's like,
right.
I understand not a lot of people have ever had to deal with that in their lives, but I mean, that's what he was. Anyway, I wasn't trying to cut you off. Continue.
No, you're fine. It is exactly what we talked about, or at least I know what I had talked about, because it made sense to me just looking at the org chart. And that is all of the decisions that were made collaboratively together between Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith. And a lot of it would come down to, here's what Arthur Smith wants to do. And then Terry Fontenot's job then is to figure out how to get the team that he's looking for. Right. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, who are you looking at? Who are you wanting? Okay, maybe we can't quite get that guy. If you can't get that guy, who's the next guy? You know, like, let's figure this out so that we can do it while not killing ourselves in the cap. So that's the kind of work that you would have between those two. They would make those decisions. And then they would go to McKay if they had some kind of issue or they needed advice or, mm-hmm. you know, hey, this is what we want to do. Is there something maybe we're missing? Like, get fresh eyes to take a look at it, maybe, and see, is there something better we could do with this? Get some different perspectives. That's what he was then. That's what he won't be that way. He'll be that way for Atlanta United now, not for the Falcons. Now it'll just go straight to Blank.
Right, Blank, you know, and then Beatles is also there for them to – bounce stuff off of. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, and listen, for McKay on the soccer side, at least, if anyone hears an Atlanta United thing, because I do cover Atlanta United as well, like, he's not going to be involved in the day-to-day either on that side. You know, there's a lot of soccer business development that needs to happen. Obviously, the World Cup announcement came recently. There's going to be eight World Cup games here in a couple of years, and there's just a lot of things that he will be really helpful for, I think, on that side of the business. And I think on the football side, you know, Terry Fontenot said it, is like, I came in as a first-time GM. Arthur Smith was a first-time head coach. It was very helpful for us to just have someone like Rich that we could talk to if we ever needed some help. And sometimes you have conversations with somebody and it's not even something that they directly say about football or whatever that adds some insight, some level of insight, and allows you to do your job better. And so it's funny to me when we have this conversation, because I think, JR, you were saying it earlier, that it, you know, it kind of became a scapegoat more or less kind of at some point. And it's like, yeah, you can have issues with Rich McKay, but was Rich McKay related to the like the red zone play calling that you had problems with 3 weeks before, you know, 3 weeks before or whatever? What, you know, so it's like, you know, we like to complain about a lot of things. I'm sure there are things in the front office structure that can be optimized, and I'm sure that they look at that constantly. But ultimately, I think a lot of this conversation, especially around Rich McKay, has been just kind of overblown, just because people are frustrated and people are really upset.
You need a target.
Been bad for so long.
That's it. You need a target. All right, let's continue to help pay some bills, so to speak. Bradley said this is the first time since our Super Bowl that a coach acknowledged the pain and recognized what we went through as a fan base. He knows what we felt because he went through it with us. Yeah, I mean, he went through it with us in a way that nobody else has, in a sense of being on that sideline, knowing what all the players, you know, went through to get there, knowing how hard it is, and then going to an organization that made the hard choice by moving Jared Goff and bringing in Matt Stafford and then getting to the pinnacle, you know. So he's seen the lows and the highs. So it'd be interesting to see how that benefits him. Keep rolling.
Well, that kind of segues into something else. That, you know, just like that quote from earlier, it's like a lot of the guys that he's brought in are not guys that have been perfect, right? They've just been on a constant rise. They've risen, then they got knocked down, and they rose back up again. In some cases, they may have gone up, down, up, down, up, down. But it's like these are guys that have been through adversity, have come out the other side, have been successful post adversity. So they know what that feels like to, okay, yeah, things are not going great now, but we just keep working at it. Just keep going, and we're going to get to where we want to be, but you got to just keep doing it.
Yep.
Right. And I really liked that when he brought that up in the press conference.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep going here. Willie with another comment says, were you all surprised to hear Raheem Morris and Fontenot say that the team is in a win now mode? Like not at all, really.
Yeah, not at all.
That's the
reason they made the change. It's because they're in win now mode.
Exactly. Yeah, I kind of expected that aspect. Our good buddy from up north, Damski, says, what's up, folks? He said, can you comment on Terry and Raheem's bromance already? he says, also hope you beautiful men are well on this day. Very well today.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Damski.
Okay, that tails into, I'm going to couple that with this comment, okay? Fred Butts, we appreciate you with another $5. He says, I don't think Terry Fontenot really liked Arthur Smith. His energy is completely different with Raheem. Okay, so the reason why I wanted to bridge those two comments is because if you want to act like, you know, Raheem and Arthur butted heads or there was a different relationship there, you can point to the fact that, you know, Terry didn't have anything to do with Arthur being hired, you know. So this was a purely co-worker type situation. Like, Joe, I'm pretty sure you don't have any say of what goes on down at 92.9. Mm-hmm. I know I don't have any say of what goes on at, you know, my office, and I'm assuming same with you, Jonathan. Sometimes you just have to work with people. And it's not that you don't like them or you do like them. You just have to work with them, right? That's just part of the game plan. But now you have a different dichotomy, now it might not even be the right word. I may have used a $5 word, not had the money for it. Anyway, you have a different situation as to Terry leading the search that ultimately came out with Raheem Morris. In a lot of ways, you got to feel like he's probably more invested in that. So do you think that has something to do with the bromance? Can you speak on the bromance that was forming?
So I understand the formulation that's happening here, but I don't think there was friction between Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot. And, you know, listen, like, I know a lot of fans don't like Arthur Smith. He's gruff in press conferences and he probably could have sent some better things at certain times, whatever. But everybody you talk to has nothing but good things to say about Arthur Smith and their personal relationships with him, whether that's coaches or other players that have played under him. And I'm not trying to suggest that every player loves him, but he's a much like funnier and just like down to earth guy than I think a lot of people suspect. I don't know, but I don't think there was any issues there. And I think that, you know, that can be true. And also, it can also be true that Terry Fontenot is ecstatic to have Raheem Morris in here because they formulated a bond really quickly.
Right. Both statements can be equally as true, because that leads into this here, you know, from Hucklebuck. Says, having a coach like this is refreshing after three grueling years of the grump.
Well, now, here's what I'll say. Like, while Mike Smith was not a grump, okay, he wasn't the grumpy Gus in front of the camera and all that jazz. He was kind of blah. Right.
Just very kind
of bland. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's what he was in front of the camera when you saw him at press conferences and things like that. And then Quinn comes in and he's, let's do this, man. We're going to be fast, physical. And everybody's like, oh my God, it's so refreshing to see that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that is whatever the opposite is.
Yeah,
of course.
It's going to be refreshing because now instead of got a guy that comes in here and he's like, I'm not here to please your fantasy, whatever, blah, 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 get off my lawn. You know, right. And this guy's going, hey, man, we got some barbecue ribs cooking back here. You want to come and grab a beer? Let's, you know, whatever, you know, when you have that, it's going to be refreshing no matter what. If things don't work out with Raheem, I guarantee you, whoever the next coach is, if he comes in and he's kind of like a hard ass, you know, military. And
everybody's like, oh, it'll be refreshing.
Oh, man, straighten these guys out.
Hey, it's what Damski says here.
Yeah.
Winning cures all problems.
Yep.
If Raheem gets the squad winning, no one will mention Rich, as this is obviously talking about Rich. But the first part of that statement is extremely true.
Mm-hmm.
Is if they, you know, hit the ground running, so to speak, and then they start winning, right, then this will be great. But as we kind of said pre-show, if we don't, if we turn in another 7-10 season for a fourth year in a row, is it still going to be refreshing to the fan base? Is it still going to be refreshing to have, you know, a charismatic leader at the podium after you just got your teeth kicked in by the Derek Carr led Saints? Like,
yeah, we were talking about this before we started the show, but it's like one of those things where, you know, Arthur Smith's personality at the podium, you know, grew old on people because the expectations didn't come to fruition. The same happens if you have a go-hung, you know, like we saw, I think with Dan Quinn. Like, I think it was like a perfect example of a guy who's like this like optimistic go get them type of guy. And when the results aren't coming and it's like, well, we got to, you know, keep going. And it's like, oh, that just like starts to grate on you. But it's all comes back to the results. And I would even argue that I always got the sense that people kind of like, they kind of appreciated Arthur Smith's like us against the world, F your fantasy team, when they got off of that 2-0 start, you know, like,
right.
Who cares? It's like, you know, and I think people kind of like that, you know, the mustache, all that stuff. But then the results go the way they did. And you know, you start to look a different way at that kind of style that he had. So, I think it's just, the results mean everything. But, you know, certainly with Raheem, I mean, he is one of those guys who's just, he's just like magnetic, you know, when he starts speaking, you know, it reminded me of the first time we got to talk to Bijan after he was drafted. Like, he walks in the room, he's just got this big smile, and it's just like you're almost just smiling because you're watching him smile. And it's like, and Raheem has that very similar effect where it's like he's just like such a positive person. It's like it like lifts up your day just like getting to talk to him, and hopefully the players can feed off of that.
Oh yeah, no, it's like he was definitely has a magnetic personality. Like, I use the word charismatic on purpose because that comes across. It comes across as genuine. It comes across as like grateful is a weird way to say it when you're talking. He shouldn't feel grateful in a sense. He should feel like he's accomplished, if that makes any, you know, sense, as far as, you know, landing one of these jobs, because I believe he, I honestly believe he deserves it. You know, I had an unquantifiable feeling before he, you know, when it was first announced that we were going to interview him, I was like, you know what, that was one that made sense to me. Now, is it going to pan out? You know, time only knows. But I do think that he has a very charismatic personality. Now, it's going to jump the gun a little bit here. We'll maybe spend a little bit of time on this. But King Seven says, question for you guys. Do you think having QBs like Ryan and Matthew, do you think Raheem will want a veteran, someone who's already get this team to compete, already ready to get this team compete, or with, you know, go with somebody like a Fields or a QB draft? There were some comments that were made both by Terry and by you know, Raheem when the QB obviously was brought up. First of all, let's just go ahead and put it like this. I wonder if you come out of the same feeling that, like, Desmond and Taylor are not going to sniff QB1 at all.
Yeah, oh, QB1, no. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I almost, like, right now in every projection that I have going, like, as far as roster construction, I actually have them cutting Heinicke.
Yeah, so do I. So do I.
Yeah, so I don't think Heinicke will be here, and I'm pretty sure if Desmond's here, which, like, why wouldn't you keep a cheap, you know, contract with starting experience, I fully expect him to be the backup, maybe the third string. What do you?
So the, I think that that is very reasonable, and it, I don't know if I would, like, I think that's definitely an option. Like, that's definitely like a fine option, I think, to have a really cheap quarterback that has a lot of starting experience as your backup. I think that's fine. I do wonder if Dez is so, like, kind of beaten down psychologically by the experience that it would behoove both him and the Falcons to potentially deal him. I do think because of his price, he would have some value on the trade market. I think that teams think that, you know, we can make him better than, you know, the Falcons put him in a bad position, and, you know, he can at least be our backup at least.
Right.
But I think they would only do that if they do the double dip strategy this offseason at quarterback, which is to sign a veteran, like probably sign the guy who you plan to start this year, and then also draft a quarterback somewhere in the draft who you can kind of groom for the next couple of years to eventually become the starter.
Yeah, that's something I got a, for those who are interested, I got a video coming out on Friday that kind of explores the next big, like, move, the next big domino, which would be, you know, the quarterback situation. So I kind of dive into it there, but I do see a situation where you could sign a guy like a it's gonna pain me to say it, but like a Russell Wilson. If he gets cut, like, he may not command a ton of money because of how much money Denver still be really paying cheap. Him.
Yeah. One of the cheapest options actually out there, honestly.
Right. So, like, you could sign him and potentially have him for a couple years while you're grooming a guy like a Michael Penix or like a Bo Nix that you potentially get at the top of the second round. But, you know, we'll get in. We got a ton of time to.
Well, I'm going to say, if you go that route, what's being tossed around online, you know, on Twitter, I think it might have come from Rothstein, but apparently, like, the talk is that 3 years, $36 million, so like $12 million a year. If you can get Russell Wilson for $12 million a year, I'd be okay with that. And I think if you go that route, then you're not looking at probably Daniels or any of those guys. What you're probably looking at, in my opinion, is probably Spencer Rattler.
Well, somebody like a Rattler. That
somebody like third, fourth round, or maybe second, maybe late second round, if you still have both your twos. But, you know, maybe you go there just to make sure you get him. But, like, honestly, outside of the top three, he's kind of the guy that probably intrigues me the most from an arm talent, movement, everything. But he's the guy that if I go that route, that's the guy that I probably invest in and let him sit behind a Russell Wilson. Let him learn from Zach Robinson for a year, 2 years, whatever. to kind of like absorb all that before you set him loose. That's the guy that I would be interested in that scenario.
Yeah, there was something that that Terry said actually in that interview with Dukes and Bell after the press conference that I thought was really interesting, which was he was talking about, you know, offseason acquisitions with the free agency and then the draft. And he said, the draft is kind of like going to the grocery store, and it's like, you never want to be hungry when you go to the grocery store. And it's the similar in the draft. You never want to go into the draft being like, we need this guy or this position. Like, we have to have, and we have to do whatever it takes to make that happen, because that's how you end up getting fleeced typically. And honestly, that it oftentimes is, ends up results in a bad decision. And so but it got me wondering if they want to kind of cover their bases at the quarterback position with a free agency signing. And then, and maybe it's not Kirk Cousins. Maybe it's a Jacoby Brissett, who is, you know, kind of that backup tier, but has been in some of these systems before, has a lot of experience. So, you know, maybe it's Russell Wilson too, who knows?
Right.
But yeah, that kind of led me to think like, okay, maybe they are going to try to like get a little bit themselves a little bit more situated at the position before they go into the draft, because, you know, think about it. If you're another team and you see the Falcons, they haven't done anything at the quarterback position really.
And they're calling
you
on the phone.
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's the thing is like, you know, if they're calling you on the phone, that's you know, problematic for the Falcons. But yeah, at worst, I could see somebody like, you know, it's a new day up in Seattle. You know, if they cut bait on Geno Smith, he's shown that he can perform at a, you know, Jacoby Brissett or higher tier, you know, but definitely not like full-time starter. Like CDX has a good point. Like if the Rams don't retain Wentz, he was with the Rams at the end of last year. So if they don't retain him, you know, that could be an interesting pickup there, you know, as far as a guy to what they may be looking for is a guy who can start for a year or two, right? To get somebody else up to, because something that never leaves my mind is the year one of Terry Fontenot being here, citing the Kansas City model of getting the team ready before you drop to QB in, you know, and even when they traded up to draft Mahomes, he still sat for a year behind Alex Wright. Alex Wright, you know, so, you know, if that's the situation that they are modeling themselves after, you know, then I could easily see them going and getting somebody who, you know, like I said, could hold it down for a year or maybe even 2 years. So
here's my thing at the quarterback position is like, I don't, and this is kind of regarding the kind of the Wentz, and maybe the idea there would be to, you know, you sign a guy like Wentz and then you draft, you know, you do try to trade up and get one of these premium quarterbacks. But to me, if I'm the Falcons, it's like, I wouldn't want to skimp at this position. Like this would be the one position where obviously I would want to make sure that we are like more than settled with a, not just like so-so quarterback, but because I'm just to kind of put my cards out there. Like if it were me, if I'm playing Terry Fontenot, I am signing Kirk Cousins because he is that guy. And I think that there are very legitimate question marks about Kirk Cousins this particular year because of the injury. And that is definitely a concern. That's something I'm never going to know about. But like that's I just say that to say like that's kind of the level of that's like the level you need to be at of like going kind of all in at this position to just to make sure you're sorted out. And
to me, and it's
yeah,
to me, it's a you know, it's a Kirk Cousins. If you feel like he's 100% healthy, you know, and if you're like, okay, I'm going to win now with Kirk Cousins while building, then I wouldn't even mind still then trading up to get a Drake May or whatever, or whoever might fall down to 3 or 4. Right. So like win now with Kurt and build for the future, like cake and eat it too type situation. Well, if I've often seen that with, in my mind with Baker Mayfield, he's 28 years old. There's no reason why you can't, you have familiarity with him. This is all saying that these folks get out of their current towns.
Right. Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, like Baker Mayfield, you grab him. He has familiarity with Zach Robinson and Raheem Morris already. KJ Black as well. They got him ready to play like within 2 days of getting to the Rams last year. Yeah, CDX, like that's a $40 million cake. It is. Both of those answers.
It is, yeah.
Like that's money. That's, and that's something that I bring up on Friday, you know. But, you know, Fred has a good point, you know, in the, like, if we're not going to draft a first rounder, he wants Fields. Now, the part that has always interested me about Fields, at least as of right now, is he's only in his, like, he just completed his third year. Like, that could be your long-term. At the end of the day, that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to get off the QB carousel as quick as possible. And if that is, you know, a Geno Smith, you know, could be real good. Same thing with Russell Wilson. If it's, if that gets us off the QB carousel, and then you pair that with a young guy to learn, that's a great situation to me. Like, I wouldn't be mad at that at all. Tony Wright's laughing at my Baker Mayfield. Did you just watch the season yet? I mean, he's boom or bust in the sense that that's the best season he's ever produced. But
I get it. He's easy to kind of like be like, punch it back. But like, yeah, not after like last season. He, I mean, he really broke out.
I mean, yeah.
Well, and he credits ROC.
Yeah.
You know, him and McVay for like kind of revitalizing his career, like getting him to play the way he's playing now. And not worry about any expectations, not worry about all the other stuff. Just go out, be yourself, have fun. And when he did that, he started playing better, played good for the Rams last season. And then this season, obviously, we saw how that worked out. So, like, do I want to pay Baker that money? Hell no. But, I mean, you're going to pay – if you're going to go that route, whether it's him or Cousins, you're going to be paying that kind of money.
Oh yeah, like right.
And those are probably your two best options.
Like right for now,
reliably winning games, probably this.
Like to me, your highest tier is Cousins. Like as far as your free agent, like potential free agent QB, right? Your highest tier is Cousins, and then from there, like you could flip a coin between Russell Wilson and Baker. The difference there is like Russell's 35, and when Russell was allowed to cook, aka Nathaniel Hackett, it looked horrible. Mm-hmm. When he was not allowed to cook, aka Sean Payton, he recaptured some of that Seattle magic, right? Mm-hmm. So which Russell are you actually getting?
Mm-hmm.
Well, but even then when he was playing under Payton, like when he stayed within the offense, Sean Payton's offense, it didn't really look all that great. It was when the play happened and then the play broke down or what have you. And then he had to do what he's done his whole career in Seattle, which is the play almost never worked immediately. I'm going to drop back. I'm going to look at 1-2, maybe my third guy. By that time, the line has disintegrated. I'm going to run around this 50 yards in this backfield. And then finally somebody's going to come open and I'm going to chuck it to him. Mm-hmm. That's what has been Russell Wilson's entire career.
Yeah, that's Russell Cook. That's funny. Fred's like, heck no to Baker. I think everybody – it's so funny. Like, look, I get it. Baker is what he is. But if you'd had – look, perfect example. If you'd had Baker on this team last year, probably would have been a playoff team. You know, I mean
– yeah. For sure.
Especially, and then y'all would be still complaining about Arthur Smith.
It's funny because like I see Baker and Fields very similarly in this respect of like they both had their best years last year, but there's definite question marks about these guys, I think. It seems to me like people have a lot fewer question marks about Justin Fields, just generally speaking. But if you look at his numbers, he's played 40 games in his career and has 30 interceptions and 30 something fumbles, 38 fumbles, I think. So averaging almost a fumble a game. That's not fumbles lost. That's just total fumbles, but almost a fumble a game. And, you know, an interception 3 out of 4. I mean, he turns the ball over a lot, and he's kind of similar to Russell Wilson in that respect, where he's obviously dynamic and can make things happen outside the pocket. But what we heard from Raheem Morris, and I asked him about this, we all basically got one question in the press conference, and so I asked about the quarterback and kind of what Zach Robinson is going to look like. What's he going to look for in a quarterback? How have you know, and how they've seen him work with quarterbacks? And I don't even know if this was Raheem said this in response to my question, but he talked about wanting a quarterback who keeps a good rhythm, is an elite processor. Just like, and to me, that's not the kind of style that Russell Wilson plays. It's not the kind of style to me that Justin Fields is. Those are guys who want to play longer, you know, like play outside of the pocket and make things happen.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Is like when you look at Fields' 3 years, you know, it's, you know, first year, 7 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Second year, 17 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. Last year, 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. This is all passing, of course. Now, he's had a lot more rushing. Let's see. Rushing TDs, you know, 2, 8, and 4, you know, respectively.
And Fields, you know, and I don't know if this is, I mean, I'm sure part of this is down to his play style, but like he's never played an entire season. I think 15 games is the most he's played here, 3 years, we'll something like that. Yep. So just 12, another thing I think that 13, has to,
so.
12, okay, yeah. So just like, I think, you know, you have to consider these, all these.
Oh, things. Yeah. Yeah. You have like those things have to be considered.
And then lastly, just like something I wanted to touch on, and I remember if I mentioned this on this show or some others, but the Falcons last year ran more under center than any team in the NFL. It's actually like a pretty big gap in what the Falcons were doing and everybody else. But the next four teams in that list are the Lions, the Rams, the Vikings, 49ers. What you see is Rams with Sean McVay, and obviously where Zach Robinson comes from. Vikings, headed by Kevin O'Connell, comes from the Rams, worked with Kevin O'Connell. And then the 49ers with Kyle Shanahan, who Raheem Morris has worked with, obviously. And then you've got Ben Johnson, who's kind of his own, kind of in his own, but very similar in the style of quarterbacks or the style of offenses that they have. And who are right. the quarterbacks? Jared Goff, Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins, and Brock Purdy. So it's like, you right. know, these are the kinds of quarterbacks.
Exactly. Fred has a question for you, Joe, which we appreciate the $2 for. He says, do you think the Falcons trade up in the draft? Does that, out of that press conference, do you get a sense of that's something that they would consider?
I think that they're considering it for sure. 100% they are exploring those opportunities. Do I think that it ultimately happens? I would say no. I would not put my money on them actually trading up, just because I think it's going to cost so much, because these top three teams all need quarterbacks. And I, you know, it's just, they're in yep. such demand. There's a ton of teams that need quarterbacks actually, but the top three obviously do. And there's like three really good ones basically.
Right.
So I think it's really going to become a kind of a cat and mouse game later on in the draft to see kind of what happens with the rest of them. Cause there are some interesting prospects, and some people think more or less the Michael Nix, the JJ McCarthy's, the Bo Nixes. And we'll see how teams think about those players and whether anyone tries to make a sneaky trade up, maybe into the bottom of the first round, like I've kind of thought the Falcons might do for one of these kinds of guys.
I could definitely see that. You were talking about the under center stuff and kind of bring it back to Rattler, who we were talking about before. You know, he's played a lot under center. So, you know, if that's something they feel highly about.
And I didn't know that, but I know college quarterbacks tend to play like not under center very much at all, because that's kind of the meta in college football right now, is just like spread out shotgun, run that style of offense, which it, and some NFL teams are doing that as well, but that's just not been what the Rams do under Sean McVay. That's just not been Kyle Shanahan. And the reason why is because they want to have a diverse run game where they can line up and the defense does not know, one, if a run is going to come, and two, how that run is going to come about. And if you're under center, you can run it left, right? You can do all kinds of different things. If you're in a shotgun with an offset back, there's really only one way that one, that ball can,
there's
can
only
be
one
run
path
unless you're doing like a zone read
to be,
thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing to remember is the, you know, we keep talking about, you know, some thoughts on like what, you know, what are they going to be looking for, this and the other. We have to remember Zach Robinson, a few years ago, before he got into the league as a coach, was working for PFF. And one of the things that PFF, some of the PFF guys have talked about is, and this is since he's been named the OC, is he was a guy that was like really early on was onto Mahomes. And like, there's a lot of the guys that he, when they go through and look at what his rankings were, now they're like, we haven't gone through exhaustive detail looking at every single one of them. But it seemed like more often than not, the guys that he was like, this guy's got it. This guy's got, you know, this guy can is going to be something in the league versus a guy he looks at and he's like, just can tell. He's like, nope, this guy just doesn't, he's not it, right? And he was right more often than not, right? So if you're going to have a guy as your OC who's going to put that input in on like, here are the guys that we need to be keeping an eye on. And you know, that is, I feel really good about having him in that position. Not that I want us to be like, what does PFF say about this? that you know, completely informs, completely informs every decision we make. But I mean, the guy did this for a living for a few years. And while he was doing it, he had a really good track record of, when he picked a guy to be, thought he was going to be really good, he ended up being really good. Guy wasn't going to be any good, he wasn't any good. So when you have that kind of track record of being able to spot that kind of talent that early, that's a guy I desperately want in my strategy sessions. Trying to come up with like who we're looking at in the draft.
And so this is actually exactly what I asked. I was basically asking like, how much are you going to rely on his past experience and value evaluating quarterbacks in ultimately picking one, whether you're acquiring that guy via the draft or via free agency or whatever, in terms of what his preferences are, and obviously him being able to help identify that player for you. It's really interesting. If you go to like PFF's YouTube channel, you'll just find the one where they kind of talk about Zach Robinson a lot. You'll see that, and they go even more into detail about, first of all, they said he was probably the only person in the entire world who watched and graded every single throw by every single quarterback in the NFL for 2 years prior to him joining the Rams. So he watched a lot of the current guys, and he's seen all these, you know, veterans, Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson. Like, he's seen these guys throw a lot extensively. But I thought something that was kind of more interesting was actually previous to him being hired by PFF, he was working out quarterbacks to get them prepared for the draft. Now, this is coming out of Oklahoma State. And I guess that's called the Ranch in Texas or something like that. And they kind of alluded to, like, they didn't go into detail, but they kind of alluded to the fact that they were like, yeah, we talked to him. And like, you can tell there's some quarterbacks that he was working with that, like, he didn't really think much of, but he wasn't like putting them on blast. He wasn't putting that out there. He didn't want to hurt the guys, but you could just tell he was like, you know, I don't know this guy. So like, I think that that's a good experience for him to have worked with some of these guys, and despite the fact, and I don't know who these guys were, but you know, he has a discerning eye in terms of specifically what he likes. And by the way, it's not necessarily just about having like a pocket pass, him preferring a pocket passer over a running quarterback. He was a running quarterback when he was in college. Yeah, I was going to bring Dez Bryant, but he ran a 4.66 at the combine. Like, he was a scrambler type.
It's going to be interesting to see what his take or his like make on the McVay offense. Like, I highly doubt, being like the analytical person that he seems to be, like, I highly doubt that he's just going to be like, yep, I'm going to bring I have my McVay playbook, and you know, I'm going to, you know, call the
ported
over. Right. The exact, you know, he's going to want to put his own style and his own spin. And I don't know, if like on that, you know, to your thing earlier, like, you know, Damski brings up, he's quoted as saying that he loves a playmaker at QB, guys that can make plays out of structure too, as far as like the PFF show. So I don't know how much that's going to, you know, play into the type of offense. Plus, you have to mold and model what you have here. You know, something that I want to caution anybody to think of is, like, as we get closer to the draft, as we get into the summer and all this other stuff, look at how McVay has had to change his own offense from Jared Goff to Stafford. Okay, like, you know, it was heavy play action with Goff, basically telling Goff where he was going with the ball to Stafford, where you can play, you can do so much more with Stafford because of the way he processes and because of his arm talent, like the differencing, you know, like the different types of throws that he can make. Right. So, depending on who we get, you know, if, you know, Zach Robinson's discerning eye is, hey, I get it. He's looked like, you know, Fido's rear end, so to speak, for the first 3 years. But if you give me Justin Fields, we're going to light it on fire. Then until I see otherwise, I'm going to, you know, trust it, right? If he's on, if he was on to Mahomes before most anybody else, then if they bring in some, you know, something that catches me off guard, I'm waiting to see how it plays out. But don't caution anybody this summer, like when you go and watch the Rams, especially the Rams with Stafford under center, don't sit there and think that that's exactly what we're going to be doing here. Like I'm having to tell myself that as I'm, you know, like trying to get an idea and a feel for what we're going to do. What's up, John?
No.
Okay, cool. All right, let's get back in. Okay, let's go to something I jumped over initially. All right, so we did get it confirmed that Jimmy Lake is going to be calling plays on the defense. Not that that surprises me all that much, but I bring it up and I put it as a banner as to it lends itself to be more of Raheem Morris, the CEO, head coach, which is nowadays kind of a throwback. Do you think after going with 3 years of Arthur Smith as a play caller and head coach, do you think it was deliberate in a sense of trying to find a guy who wanted to manage the team versus managing a side of the ball, Joe?
I don't think that it was like a prerequisite for them to find that, but I think that, I think it just made sense. You know, I think it makes sense. And I think that this kind of speaks to a larger point. I think it's something that Jonathan said earlier in the show when we were talking about, you know, Arthur Smith seemed like he saw himself as the smartest guy in the room and versus Raheem Morris, obviously not, you know, saying the opposite in his press conference yesterday. But I don't think that I have a little bit of a slightly different take on this. I don't think that like Arthur Smith thought he was the smartest guy in the room. I think that Arthur Smith was in a head coaching position for the first time in his career. He was hired because of his offensive acumen and his track record on that side of the ball. And he just felt like it was his responsibility to make that work. And I do think that a fault that he, if I were to criticize him, it would be that he just was not able to adjust from that. And something that you're seeing with this coaching staff that Raheem Morris has built, and it goes to your point, JR, about him being a CEO type, is he's really filling out the coaching staff. Like there's just more coaches. Like everybody's got, you know, these very specialized kinds of areas that they have control over of the team, as to where, especially on the offensive side of the ball for the Falcons last year, it was Arthur Smith's offense, and he had kind of his guys that he trusted to help him instill that and install the offense. But ultimately it was down to him, and it really feels like now Raheem Morris is taking a very different approach, where he's kind of empowering these guys that he's hiring to really, you know, take charge, take command of who they're, you know, in kind of control over in their department. And hopefully it all kind of works. And as for Jimmy Lake, I have no idea like what his track record is or what he likes to call or anything about it. They didn't really go into it, honestly, in the press conference. No. They basically were just like, yeah, he worked his way up. And I know. And I know.
I get like I put that banner up there more as a, you know, lead into the CEO type deal. I did make a post on Twitter, like, you know, asking anybody else if they're watching like 2019 Washington Huskies or not, or if it was just me. But, you know, as far as like getting a sense of what Jimmy Lake calls as far as a defense, you know, it seems, I'll get more into it later on as the season progresses and I get more time to research it, but it does seem to be, you know, more of a, I watched one game where he stayed in, you know, single high coverage almost the entire game, had his cornerbacks, you know, pressing guys at the line of scrimmage. And then the next game I watched, It was the them against Washington State against Mike Leach and his air raid. And like he pretty much stayed in a too high shell the entire game, you know, and tried to keep everything in front of him. So definitely adaptable. But if you want to look at guys that Jimmy Lake has coached, he has coached Joe Tryon, who's down there in Tampa Bay, Elijah Molden, the cornerback who I think is on one of the playoffs, and he might be on Kansas City. I'm not 100% sure. I know he's in the league. I'm blanking on where he's playing at, but he's, you know, coached. I think there was a little bit of a crossover between him and Vita Vea out there in Washington. So he's coached some really good defensive talent, and he's helped develop some good defensive talent before he had his altercation. So I'm not so much worried about the defense per se. And I do think that he's going to be an extension of Raheem on that aspect because of how, like, their relationship together. It's obviously somebody that, you know, Raheem trusts.
Well, you know, he did, you know, the one thing I do remember from that, and I didn't get it. I haven't had a chance to go through the entire thing. I kind of got through like the first like 15 minutes or so of it.
Unacceptable.
But the one thing that I do remember was that basically Jimmy Lake is a guy that they like, at least from Raheem's perspective, is a guy that they feel like they're on the same wavelength defensively, like just how they want to go about things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, I think that Raheem will be there to help put together that defense. But again, I think Joe exactly said it, and you're basically saying the same thing, JR, which is if you're going to be a CEO, then you hire guys and then you let them do the job. You know, help with, basically he needs to be the Rich McKay of the coaching side that Rich McKay was for the executive side.
So you're saying he needs to be the bad guy.
He needs to be the bad guy. But now he needs to be the guy's like, I'm hiring you for the offense. This whole side of the corporation now, this whole this part of the company is yours. You run it. You come to me. Let me know what you're doing. Let me know what's going on, how you're feeling on it. If you need help with something, let me know. We can figure something out. Maybe you want to talk about something and get my opinion on it. Whatever. But, you know, as long as I know what's going on over there, I'm going to let you kind of do it. And the same thing on the defensive side. Like, hey, I trust you. Like, me and you are on the same wavelength here. I trust you to run this. If you need me for anything, definitely let me know. And then, obviously, they're going to have their meetings where he's going to get, you know, what's going on there. That's what that feels like. And if that's the way it works, I hope it works out because I really like that idea. So that, you know, because he did say, he's like, I'm going to let Jimmy Lake call because I want to be able to go wherever I'm needed, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, doesn't matter. Wherever I need to be, I can be there. I'm not stuck in one spot.
Yeah. You know, also, like, I think that was the importance of retaining Jerry Gray and, you know, Dave Huxtable. Like, Jerry Gray really stuck out to me as far as, like, We applauded them for pairing Jerry Gray with first-time play caller Ryan Nielsen. Now you're pairing Jerry Gray again with first-time NFL play caller in Jimmy Lake. And I think it should pay dividends, and I think that was very smart on Raheem to be able to keep those guys on staff to help smooth that transition. Fred has an interesting question for us. Or at least for me. He says, JR, what if Robinson wants to start Ritter? And then I'm firing them both into the sun. Is that what you want me to say? Like, at the end of the day, I mean, look, if he can get a good play out of him, awesome. But, you know, it's hard for me to think that he will. Let me just put it that way.
I will say this. If Ritter somehow makes it as the starter going into week one next year, my guess would be, I don't know this for a fact, but my guess would, because there's no other reason to do it. He's not, it's not like you're paying him a boatload of money or anything like that. So if he somehow comes out and game one next season, he is the QB1 starter, either one of two things has happened. Either everybody else has died, and we just have no other options, or through the course of you either sign a guy, draft a guy, do both, whatever, and then through the OTAs, through all of the training camps, the preseason, everything like that, you just flat cut, just like with Brock Purdy. You know, like at one point, Shanahan goes to his owner.
He said, damn, everybody just died.
But Shanahan and the owner for the 49ers has talked about this, yeah. And Shanahan's remarked on it, how like at one point he just goes up to the owner and he's like, I think our third QB is our best one.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And the owner remembers it because he's sitting there thinking like,
man,
we just put all this capital into all of this.
We traded up all this draft capital to get Trey Lance, and you're telling me that Mr. Irrelevant is our best QB.
Well, and so that's either one of two things. Either somehow he really got overlooked, or we are in some real, real deep ish right now. Because if he is the best, oh boy. But at the end of the day, like if he is starting QB1, I will give this coaching staff the benefit of the doubt, because I don't think they would blindly do that.
No, especially
it would only be if he actually won out. Short of everybody dying, if he won out, then he actually impressed them enough to where they were like, this is the best guy we have on the roster. And so he's going to be the starter.
Right.
And if that's the case, I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. Will I have my doubts? Absolutely.
Of course.
But at the end of the day, like if that's what they feel is the best way forward after all, you know, actually seeing him play, but in preseason, you know, in training camp, in OTAs, all that stuff, and he still comes out as QB1.
You know, the more telling thing to me, and Joe, I feel like until we get a QB, this is going to be a lingering topic, but when asked about the QB, during the presser, those like the two guys on who are under contract, neither one were mentioned. And then the follow-up, I don't know if you saw the video with DJ Shockley, I believe is who it was, like where Terry pretty much thanks Ritter and Heinicke for everything that they have done. Like, I just don't see a scenario where they're going to be given a true shot.
Heinicke's gone.
Yeah,
$7 million. The price.
He gives you money back on the cap to go do other things. Like, there's no way, unless Heinicke takes a massive pay cut.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
If Ritter had Heineke's contract, Ritter would be 100% gone. We would be talking about the same way. You know, and the only reason I think that we're talking about Ritter potentially, you know, being on the team, being the backup, is because of his contract. And so, yeah, that's it. And like, as far as him, like, what if he's a QB1? Like, the reason I doubt it is because, with that, like I said, we want, you know, elite processor. Desmond Ritter is not that. He's not, and it's evident in not just the amount of interceptions that he threw, but the way that he threw them, just shows you that he was not processing what defenses were throwing at him.
That's the bigger thing. Is like, it's so funny. Like, us Falcons fans are weird in a sense of like, hey, we're going to be loyal to the first person who shows us interest, in a sense. Like, you know, when you immediately fall head over heels for the girl who says hi to you because they showed you interest. Like, the people who are like absolutely dedicated to Ritter after a year is crazy to me, in a sense. Like, but I love him. Hey, Fred, I appreciate you again. He says Ritter was not the problem. It was Arthur Smith. I don't agree. I really don't. Like, I get it. Like, he got fired. I understand. I'm not sitting here. Like, maybe you could put me in the bucket of always seeming like I'm trying to defend Arthur Smith. I'm not necessarily. But if he was that much of a problem, do you think he would have landed on his feet almost immediately in Pittsburgh, where they don't necessarily have a QB nailed down?
The biggest problem Ritter had last year, other than, you know, he's a rookie, so I don't. Could he eventually be a better processor of information? Absolutely, as he gets, you know, more and more used to what he sees. Could that happen? Sure. Did I expect turnovers this year? Absolutely. The biggest problem that Ritter had this year, And when he looked his best is when he wasn't doing this. And that is he, at some point, he like things are not going quite as well as he wants them to. And so he tries to do more than what is there in front of him. Like he tries to play hero ball, and you can't do that unless you're a Mahomes or a Josh.
Well, I mean, but here's the deal. Like, if you want to talk about, like, if we want to spend the next 5-10 minutes or whatever talking about Ritter, that's what he did in college. And yeah. If you go back and watch.
But you can get away with it in college.
Right.
You cannot get away with
it. That's the thing is, like the first half of a game is him, like, not struggling through it, but, you know, getting into rhythm and all. And then you got the second half of the game where he has to play hero ball. That's what he did at Cincinnati, and he was able to get away with it. Okay. So we'll see how it all moves forward. I don't think that, I don't think that he's a bad QB. I just don't think he's a starter level QB. And that's fine. He may end up going on to have a 10-year, 15-year career in the league, you know, as a backup. Totally. That's not the end of the world. It's really not, especially not for a guy.
Make plenty of money as a backup.
Yeah. And one other thing about the quarterback position, I think, like, you got to expect that your backup quarterback is going to be playing some pretty important snaps for you at some point during the season. Like, if you look around the league, almost every single team had their backup quarterback, if not in for an entire game, was at least, you know, playing some significant snaps in some important games for them. So you need to have those guys ready to go.
Well, yeah. And especially if you're talking about, like, you know, with the way the league is going right now and the kind of guys people are wanting as their quarterback or getting as quarterback, ones that everybody wants as their quarterback is essentially the Jaden Daniels, the Josh Allens, the Patrick Mahomes, the mobile, whether they're looking to run, whether they're looking to, you know, scramble to pass, whatever, but guys that are trying to extend plays as long as possible in order for those plays to come open. When you start, like, trying to eke out every, you know, something of, you know, every last ounce of possibility out of every single play, there are going to be plenty of times where you're going to put yourself in a bad position, and in the NFL, in the college game, you can get away with it. In the NFL, eventually, you're going to get rocked. Yep. And it, essentially, that's what ruined RG3's career, was he tried to do too much. He tried to play hero ball. He tried to, like, he gave his all. Okay, I get it. But at the end of the day, you got to protect yourself, especially if you're going to be running around these fields with these, you know, freight trains masquerading as linebackers that are going to kill you if you don't get yourself down.
Yep. To somebody's point talking about, did we forget about Peyton Manning and his picks as a rookie? Yeah, but you seem to have forgotten his 28 touchdowns as a rookie. You know, yeah. So, like, that's the other issue that I had necessarily with Ritter is, and it's part of an issue with Fields his first few years. He just didn't throw enough touchdowns. I can handle the turnovers if you were then putting points on the board.
There was no return on investment of the with regards to the turnovers versus interceptions. You were getting just as many interceptions, if not more interceptions, than you were touchdowns.
Yeah, you were like, he had 12 interceptions, 12 touchdowns. Like, that's,
yeah.
Yes, rookie season. Get it. Okay, Kenneth, we got another. After this show, I'm done with the Ritterites going on because unless he gets named number one, I don't think it's going. All right, so I'm going to check. My man wants me to look at Tom Brady's stats. All right.
I think we did this.
I think we did. I'm not 100% sure, but hey, you know, we're going to go back and do it again, right?
The other shame about with Ritter while you do that, JR, is like, yeah, he just, like, didn't seem to improve in some of these aspects over the course of the season. Like, you don't really have a glimmer of optimism. Like, he was at least getting it together those last four games or whatever. Right. In fact, if anything, it probably seemed like it was at its worst
Tom Brady's there. His season of his first season as a starter, okay. First full season. He had 18 touchdowns and 12 interceptions. He still had 18 touchdowns. Like, I know you're thinking, oh, well, that's only six more. Yeah, six more. Like, and you're going to say, oh, what about Ritter's running touchdowns? No, I'm talking about, this is a passing league, bro. This is like, and this is how you stay in games. Like, the running is great. I love, you know, QBs that can extend plays and make some magic happen when they get down close to the goal line. But if that's what you're relying on, that's problematic. Hence why I feel for Justin Herbert and Greg Roman being his OC. Right. You know, so anyway, all right.
And Ritter can be a back, like he can be this team's backup quarterback. If Zach Robinson thinks there's something there, you know, it's like, I don't want to write him off. Even if it's not with the Falcons, do trade him, you know, he could still be a productive quarterback in his career. So many quarterbacks, you look around the league, it seems like quarterbacks are playing like well into their mid 30s at the highest level that I can recall. Maybe it happened kind of earlier in my life, like in my life in the 90s, they were playing like that, but you look at these guys and so you never want to close the door on a player as young as Ritter so early, but
no,
the facts
by no
means.
And look, at the end of the day, if they keep Ritter and bring in somebody else, and like we're talking about Ritter the way we talked about Spencer Rattler and all this other jazz, hey, you spend 3 years or 2-3 years learning the system and all this other stuff, so be it. Whatever. Again, I'll eat crow. I don't mind it. I ate crow with CP84. That was a signing that I wrote off, and I was like, holy crap, I was wrong about that. If I'm wrong, hey, I'll admit it. I admit it in a sense. Like, I'm the one that was like, hey, I really, you know, pounded the table, so to speak, for Arthur Smith. Didn't work out. I was wrong on that one. There were things that he did right that I thought he was going to do, like revitalize a run game. And before you talk about, oh, he didn't utilize Bijan Robinson, that's a fallacy. That man had 1,400 yards.
From touches.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, he had, you know, over 1,400 yards from scrimmage. I had almost, over 8 or 9 touchdowns. Like, he used them, okay? So to think that he didn't is silly. The problem that I think he got into a lot of times was he had too many toys, in a sense, with, you know, Pitts and London and, you know, Bijan. You couldn't, whatever. All right. We have rambled on
an hour.
Dude, it could, but then my brother-in-law would be like texting me, asking me where am I at? Cause
like, he's going to be texting you like, do you hate me now? Right. No. Would you kick me out?
he's going to pop up in chat. Hey, you forgot to come pick me up. And I'm like, no, I didn't, dude. I'm trying to. So, either way.
I'm trying to convince these guys that Ritter is trash.
No, I ain't trying to say that. Didn't use Pitts at all. Didn't use Pitts at all, other than almost broke the NFL record for a rookie tight end. Didn't use him at all. Anywho, we appreciate y'all. Joe, tell the folks where they can find you.
You can find me on Twix at JAPatrick200.
There it is.
And on that, in the game sometimes.
There it is. And what's the, I know you got a soccer podcast that you do.
Oh, yeah. It's called Five Stripe Final. You can find us at fivestripefinal.com, which is not live, but you can sign up, and we'll be launching later this month.
There you go. So, nice. So if y'all are into the other kind of football, definitely check that out, especially the Atlanta United variety. Jonathan, tell them where they can find you at, sir.
No, I don't want them bothering me.
Understood. All right. Well,
at Jonathan M. Holder, come by, say hi.
There you go. And as always, young, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Graham1128, and do follow me because I interact there a lot. There's a lot of times where I'm grabbing things from there for the show type deals. Oh, so,
yo. Before we go, I asked out of your Falcon Minds guys last week, I want to ask Joe this week, who you got in the big game this weekend?
Like, my head says the Niners, but like, I just feel like betting against Mahomes is a death wish. So, I think I'm going to go Chiefs. I have not really thought about it that much. Like, since the Falcons, like, I'm so focused on the Falcons that like, I don't really think about the NFL all that much outside of being excited to sit down and just watch the games when they come on. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, I put a lot more thought into it typically. But I'll go with the Chiefs. Although I'll probably be rooting if I could choose, I would. I don't really like either of these teams, to be perfectly honest. But if I could choose, I'd probably like the 49ers, just because the Chiefs have won too damn much.
There it is. Yeah, they're the new Patriots. I'd rather let somebody else win. Nick thinks the Chiefs are going to win at 27-24. So
I want 49ers win, not because of Shanahan, and as much as I don't like Shanahan because of what he did to us, I would love to see Mr. Irrelevant win a touchdown.
Like, there's some good storylines for the 49ers as far as, like, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, like the fact that if you're so tired of hearing and, you know, about Taylor Swift, you know, the Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, the Chiefs Isaiah have become Oliver. The new Patriots. Right. Exactly. And so, you know, I would like to see, I don't know, like I said it before, I'll root for, you know, Brock Purdy and whoever the script and Taylor says the Chiefs. There it is.
Speaking of this, if you're still up after the Super Bowl, I believe I'll be on TV that night on locally in Atlanta on 11 Alive. For the there sports
it is. I'll check it out.
Yeah, check out Joe's pretty face on 11 Alive. All right, folks, we appreciate y'all. Like I said, I got a video coming out on Friday going in a little bit deeper with this QB talk, as this will dominate most of the offseason. And we'll see y'all back live next Tuesday. As always, Falcons fans, rise up.
Rise up.